Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive with us. Today, we are going way back in time to ancient Judah. We're going to be taking a look at the reign of King Hezekiah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Hezekiah, he wasn't just like your typical good king, you know? He was actually known for something much deeper, a deep, unwavering trust. And it's that trust that really shaped his decisions and ultimately the fate of his kingdom.
Yeah, it's so interesting. It's so fascinating, isn't it? Because we're not just talking about like trust in this abstract sense. We're talking about trust in the face of like truly terrifying odds.
Yes.
You know, imagine leading a nation when the Assyrian Empire, like the superpower of the ancient world.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Has their sights set on you.
It's huge.
Yeah.
And I think that's so easy to get lost in the historical details of it all. But this is about a real person, a real king.
Yeah.
Facing a life or death situation.
Absolutely.
And the stakes were so high.
Oh yeah.
The Assyrians, they had already conquered the northern kingdom of Israel.
Right.
They had scattered its people.
Right.
So for Judah, this little kingdom in the south, the pressure was immense.
Absolutely. And that's where Hezekiah's trust, I think, becomes even more remarkable.
Yes.
Because he comes to the throne with this immense pressure just bearing down on him. And like one of the first things he does is launch sweeping religious reforms.
Yeah. Okay. Let's unpack this a little bit.
Okay.
So he goes beyond his predecessors.
Right.
He takes this like drastic step of destroying the high places.
Yeah.
You know, these local shrines that had become so ingrained in the religious landscape.
Yeah.
Okay, what's really intriguing to me is this detail about the bronze serpent.
Ah, yes, the bronze serpent made by Moses himself during the Exodus.
I know.
People have been burning incense to this thing for 700 years.
700 years.
700 years. And Hezekiah destroys it.
Yeah.
I mean, this wasn't just about like decluttering.
Right.
It gets to the heart of Hezekiah's understanding of covenant faithfulness.
So what's the significance then of that act?
Yeah.
Why destroy something so historically and religiously significant?
Well, I think it boils down to a fundamental question.
Okay.
What does it mean to truly trust in God, to be in a covenant relationship?
Yeah.
Hezekiah believed that true worship, it belongs solely to Yahweh.
Okay.
The God who had brought them out of Egypt, the God who had made that covenant with them.
So by destroying these symbols,
yes,
even the revered bronze serpent,
right,
he's making this powerful statement. He's essentially saying, we're putting our trust in Yahweh alone.
Right.
We are going back to the core of our faith.
Right.
But what does that mean for us today? How do we apply this idea of like this radical trust in a world that's filled with uncertainties and pressures?
That's where it gets really interesting because think about Hezekiah's situation. He is facing the mightiest army in the world.
Yeah.
An army known for its brutality, its ruthlessness, and yet he chooses to trust that God will protect him. That's not just faith. It's almost counterintuitive.
It's like saying, I'm going to stand firm even when everything around me is telling me to run.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that is where the story of Sennacherib comes in.
Okay.
This Assyrian king, he was a master strategist, both militarily and psychologically.
Uh-huh.
And he knew that breaking an enemy spirit was as important as breaking their defenses.
Oh, for sure. And he was ruthless in achieving that goal.
Yes, he was.
When his army captured the city of Lachish, he sent his commander to Jerusalem with a very specific message.
Right.
Designed to sow fear and doubt.
Right. And what's really striking is that this commander spoke fluent Hebrew.
Wow.
Imagine hearing your own language used to threaten you, to undermine your faith.
Yeah.
It's a chilling detail that adds another layer to this psychological warfare.
So rather than an impersonal threat, it becomes intensely personal and invasive.
Yeah.
But what was the commander actually trying to achieve? What were his key arguments?
Well, his strategy was brilliant, if terrifying. Yeah.
He wanted to chip away at the Judeans' trust on multiple levels.
Okay.
So first, he attacks their military capabilities, comparing them to the might of the Assyrian army.
Classic.
Right.
It's like classic divide and conquer.
Yes.
Isolate them from any potential support.
Exactly. And then he goes for like the ultimate target, their faith in Yahweh.
Oh, wow.
He insinuates that Yahweh is angry with Hezekiah for destroying all those local shrines.
Right.
He's suggesting that they've alienated their own God, leaving them vulnerable and unprotected.
That's a brilliant tactic, isn't it?
Yeah.
To not just defeat them militarily, but to crush their spirit, their belief in themselves and their God.
Yeah.
But there's another layer to this conflict that I think is so fascinating.
Right. And This is where the ancient worldview comes into play.
Okay.
You see, battles weren't just fought between armies.
Uh-huh.
They were also perceived as battles between gods.
So it was like a cosmic showdown with each nation's god fighting for supremacy. Precisely. And Sennacherib was very good at exploiting this belief.
Okay.
He boasted about conquering the gods of other nations, portraying himself as this unstoppable force.
So he's basically saying, my god is stronger than your god, so resistance is futile. But this is where Hezekiah's unwavering trust becomes truly powerful, right?
Yes.
He refuses to give in to this fear.
Right.
He chooses to believe that Yahweh is different.
Uh-huh.
That this is not a battle Yahweh will lose.
Yeah, that's such a crucial point because it reveals this fundamental clash of worldviews.
Yeah.
Sennacherib sees gods as limited, localized, conquerable entities.
Right.
But Yahweh, as Hezekiah understood him, was something entirely different.
So Hezekiah's trust, it isn't just blind faith.
Right.
It's rooted in a deep understanding of who Yahweh is.
Yes.
A God who transcends the limitations of human perception and power. And that understanding will be put to the ultimate test. As Sennacherib, despite his initial setbacks, he is far from finished.
Yeah.
So we're left with this image of Hezekiah, you know, clinging to his trust, facing down the Assyrian war machine.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that Sennacherib, despite having retreated from Lachish, wasn't done yet.
Right.
What happens next?
Well, Sennacherib likely withdrew from Lachish because of the Egyptian army's advance. But let's be clear, this wasn't a defeat.
Okay.
It was a tactical maneuver.
Uh-huh.
Sennacherib's goal remained the same. The complete and utter subjugation of Judah.
So what does he do? Does he, like, regroup and launch another attack?
He does something even more cunning.
Okay.
He sends Hezekiah another letter.
Okay.
This one is even more chilling.
Oh, wow.
More psychologically charged than the first.
Okay, so what's in this second letter? What's Sennacherib's game plan here?
He doubles down on the previous arguments, reminding Hezekiah of the Assyrian army's overwhelming might.
Right.
But then he adds a new element. A horrifying litany of his past conquests.
Oh, wow.
He lists these once powerful kingdoms. Hamath, Arpad, Sepharvaim.
Yeah.
Places that are now just footnotes in history because Sennacherib wiped them off the map.
That's a terrifyingly effective way to make his point, isn't it?
Right.
It's like he's saying, look what happened to everyone else who defied me. You're next.
Exactly. And he doesn't stop there. He even taunts Hezekiah about the gods of Samaria,
right,
the capital of the fallen northern kingdom,
mm-hmm,
asking where were they when their people needed them?
That's cold.
Yeah.
He's using their own faith against them.
Right.
Twisting it into a weapon of fear and despair.
Yeah.
It's a reminder that battles aren't just fought on physical battlefields.
Right.
They're fought in the minds of people.
Uh-huh.
In their hearts.
You're absolutely right. And remember, this wasn't just Sennacherib, like, being a bully.
Yeah.
He genuinely believed that his military victories were also victories for his god.
So in his mind, this wasn't just a war for territory or power.
Right.
It was a cosmic battle between Yahweh and the Assyrian gods.
Precisely. And in this worldview, conquering a nation also meant conquering its god.
Right.
He's basically telling Hezekiah, my god is stronger than yours, so just give up. Resistance is futile.
Wow. Faced with that kind of pressure,
I know,
that level of psychological manipulation, how does Hezekiah respond?
He does something profoundly powerful and deeply counterintuitive.
Okay.
He takes the letter,
mm-hmm,
goes straight to the temple in Jerusalem, and spreads it out before Yahweh.
It's such a vivid image, isn't it?
It is.
He's not convening his advisors. He's not drawing up battle plans.
Right.
He's going directly to the source of his strength. His trust.
It's an act of complete surrender, a radical act of faith. Wow. He's saying, okay, God, this is the situation. It's out of my hands. I trust you to deal with it.
And what happens? Does Yahweh respond to this incredible act of faith?
He does, and in a spectacular way.
Okay.
Yahweh speaks through the prophet Isaiah, delivering a message of both comfort and judgment.
So what does Isaiah say? How does Yahweh respond to Sennacherib's challenge?
He assures Hezekiah that Sennacherib's arrogance has not gone unnoticed.
Okay.
That his insults against the Holy One of Israel have been heard. It's as if God is saying, you've made a grave miscalculation, Sennacherib. You've underestimated who you're dealing with.
It's like a parent stepping in to protect their child from a bully.
Yeah.
But then there's the judgment, right?
Right.
What does Yahweh decree for Sennacherib?
Isaiah prophesies that Sennacherib will not set foot in Jerusalem.
Wow.
That he will be turned back to his own land, and will ultimately die by the sword.
That's a pretty bold statement considering the situation.
Right.
At this point, the Assyrian army is still camped outside Jerusalem.
Yeah.
It seems impossible that they would just pack up and leave.
That's the power of trust, isn't it?
Yeah.
To hold on to belief even when circumstances seem hopeless. And that's exactly what Hezekiah does. He trusts in Yahweh's word, even when everyone else is probably telling him to surrender.
And then the unimaginable happens.
Yes. That very night, an angel of the Lord goes out and strikes down 185,000 Assyrian soldiers.
185,000.
Yeah.
It's a number that's almost impossible to comprehend.
Right.
It speaks to a power that's beyond human understanding. A power that can only come from divine intervention.
It's a complete and utter rout.
Wow.
Sennacherib is forced to retreat, his army decimated, his pride shattered. Imagine the scene in Jerusalem the next morning.
Yeah.
The Assyrian camp deserted, the threat vanished. It would have been a moment of pure awe.
Yeah.
A testament to the faithfulness of Yahweh and the power of Hezekiah's trust.
So Sennacherib, the seemingly invincible king, is defeated not by military might.
Right.
But by something far greater.
Mm.
What happens to him after this humiliating defeat?
He returns to Nineveh, his capital, a shadow of his former self, and years later, while worshiping in the temple of his god Nisroch, he is assassinated by his own sons.
It's almost Shakespearean, isn't it?
It is.
The mighty king brought low, betrayed by those closest to him. There's a sense of poetic justice in it all.
Yeah.
The man who boasted of conquering gods ends up slain in the very temple he thought would protect him.
It's a stark reminder that human arrogance, no matter how powerful, is no match for the divine.
Hezekiah's trust is vindicated. Mm. He stared down the most powerful army in the world and emerged victorious.
Yeah.
It's a story that speaks volumes about the power of faith, the importance of courage, and the ultimate triumph of trust over fear.
This story has so many layers to it. We see political intrigue, military strategy, and this fascinating clash of worldviews.
Yeah.
But at its heart, it's a story about one man's unwavering trust in God.
Yeah.
A trust that ultimately saved his kingdom from destruction.
We have been on quite a journey with Hezekiah, haven't we?
We have.
It's a story that is both epic and intensely personal.
Right.
This king, facing seemingly insurmountable odds, chose to place his trust in something greater than himself. And that trust ultimately changed the course of history.
What strikes me is how relevant Hezekiah's story remains even today.
Oh, yeah.
We may not be facing Assyrian armies, but we all encounter our own, like, Sennacheribs, you know?
Right.
Those forces that try to undermine our confidence, our beliefs, and our hope for the future.
You are right.
Yeah.
They might not be literal armies, but they can feel just as overwhelming.
Oh, for sure.
It could be that inner voice of self-doubt.
Yeah.
The pressure to conform to societal expectations.
Right.
Or even the constant barrage of negative news that bombards us daily.
Those are all powerful forces that can chip away at our trust.
Right.
Not just in ourselves, but in something bigger.
Yeah.
Something that gives our lives meaning and purpose.
Yeah.
So the question becomes, how do we cultivate that unshakable trust?
Right.
That Hezekiah-level faith.
Right.
In the midst of all of that.
It feels like such a monumental task sometimes.
It is.
Especially when we are bombarded with messages.
Right.
That tell us to fear.
Yeah.
To doubt. To give in to cynicism.
Right.
Where do we even begin?
Well, I think it starts with recognizing the source of our trust.
Okay.
Hezekiah placed his trust in Yahweh, God who he believed was all-powerful, all-knowing, and deeply invested in his well-being.
Yeah.
That belief, that conviction, gave him the strength to stand firm when everything else seemed to be crumbling around him.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
If we are going to cultivate that kind of trust, we need to be clear about what or who we are placing our trust in.
Right.
What are the core values, beliefs, even people that anchor us?
Yeah.
That give us that sense of grounding when everything else feels shaky.
Exactly. It is about identifying those sources of strength and hope that transcend the uncertainties of life.
Okay.
But it's not enough to just identify them.
Right.
We need to actively nurture that trust. We need to exercise it like a muscle.
So how do we do that? What does it look like to actively exercise our trust?
It can take many forms. It might be through prayer, meditation, spending time in nature, or simply engaging in acts of kindness and compassion.
Right.
It's about intentionally connecting with those things that nourish our spirit, that remind us of what truly matters.
And what about when things get tough? When those Sennacheribs show up in our lives?
Yeah.
How do we hold on to that trust when fear and doubt start to creep in.
That's when it becomes even more important to lean into our sources of trust.
Right.
To remind ourselves of what we believe, of what has sustained us in the past.
Okay.
It's about choosing faith over fear, even when it feels incredibly difficult.
Right.
Remember, Hezekiah didn't just sit back and wait for God to act.
Mm-hmm.
He took action.
Yeah.
He implemented reforms, he sought guidance from prophets, and he stood firm against overwhelming odds.
So trust isn't passive.
It's not.
It's not about blindly hoping for the best.
Right.
It's about actively engaging with our beliefs,
mm-hmm.
putting them into practice, yeah. making choices that align with what we trust.
You got it. Hezekiah's legacy isn't just about military victories or political reforms. It's about the transformative power of trust.
Right.
It is about recognizing that even in our weakness,
uh-huh.
even when we feel overwhelmed and afraid, we can tap into a source of strength
right.
that's far greater than ourselves.
Hezekiah's story is an incredible reminder that history isn't just about dusty old tales.
Right.
It's filled with timeless wisdom and inspiration.
Absolutely.
It challenges us to examine our own lives, to identify the Sennacheribs we face,
yeah.
and to cultivate that unwavering trust that can empower us to overcome any obstacle.
Beautifully put.
Thanks.
So as you go about your day, remember Hezekiah. Remember the power of his trust and ask yourself, where do I need to lean into my own sources of strength and hope? What choices can I make that will allow me to stand firm even in the face of my own Sennacheribs?
This has been an amazing deep dive.
It has.
It's given us so much to think about, so much to apply to our own lives.
For sure.
Thanks for joining us on this journey back to ancient Judah and into the heart of a king who dared to trust.
Thank you.
Until next time, keep diving deep and keep the faith.